And it is Thursday, September the 6th, 2012. Time again for After News with Amos, the talk show of record of our African-American community. I'm Amos Brown. Glad to have you here. We may talk about arithmetic today, but in a different context than last night. Oh, but tomorrow, mark your calendars tomorrow for the full 2 hours. Your reaction to the Democratic National Convention, your reaction to the speech the President of the United States will give tonight, 10 o'clock, Indianapolis time. Your reaction, we'll talk about Brother Clinton tomorrow, not today, tomorrow. So just, you know, save it up, store it up, soak it in. But today, with the smartest talk show audience in the country, in the city, we've spent a lot of time on this program these 9 years talking about education. And if you missed our program yesterday where we talked with Wendell Ray, who hosted the Noon Show some 18 years ago, because we've been doing Daily Talk Radio on AM 1310 The Light for 20 years, commemorating 20 years this week. And Wendell reminded that there were four main issues that predominated on the Noon Show, and education was number one. So over these 20 years of daily talk radio aimed at our African-American community, education has been the lead issue. Today, we want you to expand your minds. Today, we want all the creativity that is out there, not just from the regulars, but from those of you that kind of sit back and you want to say something and contribute, this is your day. We're going to talk about education in Indianapolis. Not just the K through 12 education that involves 145,000 kids in our public schools in Indianapolis and Marion County. 55,000 are African American. Not just K through 12. But since this is the number one radio show in preschools and daycare, we also want to talk about that part of education. It's something we don't talk a lot about on the public airways. We don't talk a lot about it in community meetings. We don't talk a lot about it at the beauty shops, the barbershops, the barbecues, unless you're talking about, you know, somewhere where I can get a cheaper preschool than the one my kid is at. We've got three questions we want to hear from you today. You can contribute your ideas to all three or pick and choose. Three basic questions. What is a great school, and how do we ensure a great school for every child? That's question one. Question two, how can we ensure that every child in the IPS area, but let's expand it to the whole county, how every child can have access to a high-quality preschool experience. I said preschool, not daycare, because there's a difference between preschool and daycare. But we want to hear from you about that. And then how can we ensure all neighborhoods have equal access to outstanding schools? It's a radio town hall, and it's part of an effort called What's Possible Indy. And it is a collaboration that started with two institutions that sometimes don't get along. No, I'm not talking about me and Expo. I'm talking about two institutions that sometimes don't get along, and that is the city of Indianapolis and the Indianapolis Public Schools. But they have joined forces. They're together. It's sort of like, you know, what President Clinton said last night. Yeah, I can get along with Republicans. I can get along with anybody. And so in the studio is the superintendent of IPS, Dr. Eugene White, and the deputy mayor for education, Jason Cloth. Both here, smiling, getting along with each other. Also here are representatives of the other sponsoring organizations of this effort to encourage our community to come up with great ideas on what's a great school and how do we ensure a great school for every child? How do we make sure every child in this city and county has access to a high-quality preschool? How do we ensure that all neighborhoods have equal access to outstanding schools? Kariga Roush is here because Stand for Children Indiana, they're one of the partners. Ellen Anila, the retiring, she doesn't look retiring, but the retiring CEO of the United Way of Central Indiana. They're one of the partners. She's here in the house. Carol Craig, the Indianapolis NAACP, she's with the NAACP Education Committee. They're a part of this, as is UNCF, United Negro College Fund. Andrea Neely of UNCF Indiana is here. Indianapolis Urban League is a part of this effort. Mark Russell from the Urban League is here, and the Mind Trust is a part of this. David Harris. So I'm going to open up the phone lines. Phone lines are 239-1310, 239-1310, or you can send me an email at praiseindy.com. You can send me a text message at 85620, keyword Amos, 85620, keyword Amos. Don't worry about cost. Don't worry about, do we have to go? I don't want us to give the suggestion because then you'd have to go ask Mitch Dad. Well, he leaving. So don't worry about the politics, okay? This isn't a critique. This is for you to come up with ideas, suggestions. Not just from the regular. I want to hear from Mama, Daddy, Grandpa, Grandma, Aunt Babel, Uncle Buck, everybody. If you care about kids, if you haven't been in a school in 40 years, still want to hear from you. What's a great school? How do we ensure a great school for every child? How can we ensure every child in IPS in this city has access to a high-quality preschool experience? How can we ensure all neighborhoods have equal access to outstanding schools? The program is not only going to be recorded and put on the website at praiseindy.com. They're going to transcribe this. So this will end up like a transcription of a Bill Clinton speech. So all of your ideas will be recorded, as well as there are a lot of community town halls that are going on, and there are a number of them today, as a matter of fact. This will all be part of this community conversation. But let me start with the two institutions that kind of kicked this off, and that is IPS and the mayor's office. The superintendent of IPS, Dr. White, is here. The deputy mayor for education, Jason Close. Let me start with the superintendent first. Welcome. Why is IPS involved in this,
Doc? Well, I tell you, Amos, it's very important that IPS has an opportunity to hear from the community. We've been doing a lot of programs, a lot of initiatives. We've had a limited conversation with parts of our community. We wanted to expand the conversation. We have a lot of dynamic things occurring in the community, from the initiatives and activities of IPS and the initiatives of the mayor with charter schools, initiatives of the state with charter schools and vouchers. We have parochial private schools, and all of that mix has created a marketplace for education. But we haven't had a lot of conversation around what do we really want, what do we really need. And so we asked the mayor to join us in putting together a forum or community meetings to kind of get input so that we could solicit the opinions of various individuals. And like you say, it doesn't cost you anything to have an opinion, and we really need to hear the various opinions out there. We also would like to thank you, Amos, for helping to facilitate this on the airways today, because we need some traction to get more people thinking about this particular situation. As you said earlier, this educational question has been around for many, many years, and it's so fundamental to the success of our future and the quality of life for our communities, and it will be around for years to come. But it's important that we do the very best we can to move this community forward. And so that is the original thinking behind having these community conversations.
Deputy Mayor.
Yeah, so we were thrilled to have the opportunity to participate in this process. As Dr. White said, the implications are just so real, not only for the individual lives of children across Indianapolis, but to the health of our neighborhoods, and to the broader city's long-term economic vitality. And so we were thrilled to bring this group together to talk about what we aspire to in education for this city. And we're lucky to work alongside such incredible partner organizations in the process of planning these 30 town hall meetings and youth forums, several radio talk shows, door-to-door outreach, the construction of the website, really to make sure that we were creating every opportunity for our entire community to have the chance to weigh in with their thoughts and their opinions so that we can hear their voices. And that's very important to me, and it's very important to the mayor and our office.
All right, 239-1310, 239-1310, or send me an email at praiseindy.com or a text message at 85620, keyword Amos. Bring your suggestions, your ideas, what could be changed, improved, expanded, built upon. If you got a critique or a criticism, give us a solution. Just don't say, well, we shouldn't do that. Give us a solution. Don't worry about the cost. Don't worry about how it's done. The best ideas, this is when you're in a formal process like this, is they want your idea could be the idea that sparks, that creates that spark, that lights a positive flame. 239-1310, 239-1310. Let me start with Sean. Hi there.
Hey, Amos, and everyone.
Hi.
I just want everyone to understand that, you know, we already have it understood that education is the key to a prosperous society. We are finding ways, if we can look around, we already see what they are, is finding a way to bring these things to a slow crawl. We need to get those things out the way. We know that the kids are our future, so how are we going to neglect our kids, so therefore you're neglecting your future? So that would be my opinion.
Well, let me ask you, then, how do you ensure a great school for every child and that all neighborhoods have equal access to outstanding schools?
Make sure they have all the tools they need. That comes with, you know, the teachers, you know, if they're going to have the education they're supposed to have, make sure they do the books. Make sure they have the books. I know the air conditioning was a problem a while ago. That's, you know, if everybody else, if some other people don't have air conditioning, everyone should have it. Basically, just be equal, on an equal playing field. Don't try to, you know, give one more, give one other less. Because then you are, you know, throwing off the whole learning curve.
Should the same things you just talked about, the making sure the teachers are together, making sure the materials are there, what have you, should that also filter down or be a part of preschools for our 3-year-olds, our 4-year-olds, our 5-year-olds?
Yes, it should. Like I said before, it all should be equal. It should be like an ingredient. When you mix things together, it should be an equal amount of ingredients.
Okay.
You can't just have preschool, you know, like they're just going there to play with blocks. They're not. They're going to preschool to learn and be prepared for basically their higher learning career.
All right. The great way to start us off. Thank you. 239-1310. 239-1310's afternoon's name is legal to Cat. Hi there.
How you doing? That's exactly what I was saying. We need to go start from preschool. They need to start learning how to write numbers, how to do math, and how to write their name, first of all. And another thing is not playing in preschool no more, because we done got serious with education. The foreigners start their kids off at 2 and 3 years old. We want to wait till 5 and 6 and start ours off. And then CCDF need to give that money back so these kids can go to preschool and learn, because once they get to kindergarten, they're failing already, because they don't have a foundation.
Does daycare need to tighten up its act?
Yes, they need to learn their name. They need to learn how to write. They need to learn how to start reading books and pictures and stuff. So when they get in kindergarten, it's a whole new atmosphere in kindergarten, because they want you to write your name. Want you to do math.
So just
there's not no dot-to-dot stuff no more.
All right, so just the daycare where the kids are sitting there watching The View, that ain't strong enough.
No, they need to learn how to write. They need to learn how to get into 2-word spelling. At least single spelling, A or B, B-E or something like that. They need to know how to sound things off.
All right, my sister, I appreciate it. Thank you. Let me go to Diana at 239-1310. Hi there.
Good afternoon, Amos and Tia Gass. I'd like to say I agree with the caller that just called. You have to teach the children at home. They need to learn a lot of the responsibility and things like that to the older kids. But to the younger kids, like you said, they need to learn a lot of things at home, not just their address and just various things. And even when they get older, they need to learn discipline at home. And the parents send the children to school, and they expect the teachers to give them discipline or teach them the things that they should already learn at home.
Well, now, you brought up home, and home isn't one of the questions, because we were talking about preschool, which is where, you know, the kid is dropped off while the parents are working, are you saying that if we're talking about education before kindergarten, we need to also talk about home?
Yes, the parents at home need to put a lot more input into the child. Don't send them off to daycare expecting them to teach them everything. Teach them love and kindness at home and discipline and a lot of the things that they're expecting to for the child to learn when they go away. They need to already have learned that at home.
Okay, or if they're at preschool, at preschool.
I'm sorry?
Or if they're at preschool, at preschool.
Exactly, because I know I went to nursery school, kindergarten, and Head Start, but I was a very smart little girl because I loved it. I loved the environment around, but I learned fast and so forth because maybe, I don't know, I guess right. I had older sisters and brothers and so mm-hmm. forth. But I think, and even like with the younger people, they go to school with no discipline, acting the fool a lot of times because they're not getting the training at home. Don't expect, you know, the children wind up with all these disciplinary problems because they're not learning at home.
My thing
would be to the community to teach your children at home.
All right. You made your point. It's a good point. I want to try to get to as many as possible. 239-1310. 239-1310. It's afternoon's name is. Let me bring in Kariga Roush with Stand for Children Indiana. I also want to bring in Carol Craig. I kind of knew home would come up fairly early in this conversation. As you all have gone around and gotten feedback from the community already, has home come up or is this the first time?
Thank you again for the opportunity, Amos. No, home has come up in pretty much every conversation we've had. As we have a conversation about great schools, we know that there are at least four critical factors. We've got to have outstanding parents. We've got to have outstanding principals, teachers and support staff, and a larger community all working together to make sure kids have what they need. So parents and making sure that parents are informed with the information they need to make great decisions and be effective advocates for their kids, making sure they have the tools necessary to work with their kids at home. And a lot of other things have come up as very strong factors in a lot of the conversations we've had.
Carol Craig, you know, in terms of that, is part of the way to get great schools and high quality preschools providing the tools for parents who may not know how to be great parents. You can't have a great school without, you know, that great parent, you know, component in there to provide those skills, that training.
Yes, thanks, Amos. I appreciate that, and I appreciate the caller's comments. Parents, as Kariga mentioned, are key, and when you look at a diagram or a model of the components of a great school, parents are definitely a part of that. And as you indicate, when parents don't know or they don't have the information or their lives are such that's not a part of it, then it's the community's responsibility. It's our responsibility to do as much as we can to provide those tools, to provide the information, and to assess what the parents need and to listen to them.
239-1310. Back to the phones. And Brenda, hi there.
Hi, Amos. How are you doing?
I'm fine.
And hello to your guests that are there today. And I thank Ms. Craig for saying what she said about community coming together. The African proverb is, it takes a village to raise our children. And we have not arrived to that point to where we care enough about all children to get to that point. I'm someone who works in the area of early childhood education. And oftentimes, Amos, I have children who come from families who struggle with early education. But as a person who regards education as the first priority, along with the families, I don't use that family's situation to justify the maltreatment that a lot of these children are receiving. We are adults, and we are required to be the best that we can be for all children. So when I have children who come to me, Amos, that haven't learned how to tie their shoes, or haven't been able to learn how to sit at a table correctly, take orders, or it has to come from a place of love. Mm-hmm. And if it's not coming from a place of love, then you can't reach that child, because if you're only seeing the child's circumstance, then you never get to helping that child. And for in the black community, we are too easy to rid these children of any hope by saying that the parents are fully responsible for what happens to that child when that child goes to that classroom. As all adults in the educational system, there should be a consensus that says, as an adult person in the life of that child, at the time I have that child, whether it's 8 hours or 9 hours, I will treat this child with compassion. I will treat this child with love, regardless of their circumstance. But we haven't arrived at that aims. So by having a conversation about what makes great schools, we have to also arrive to the historical events that have happened in the lives of black people concerning education,
Brenda,
the civil rights in education.
Brenda, let me
ask you. Why did we have a 1954 Brown versus the Board of Education?
Brenda, let me ask you, because as I was listening to you talking, it flashed in my mind the oath that physicians must take, the Hippocratic Oath, which is the prime, that prime directive, do no harm. If we're trying to build great schools and high-quality preschools, should those people in charge, those educators, those caregivers and educators at preschool and regular school, should there be a Hippocratic Oath for them?
Sure, there should be, Amos, just like in any professional profession. Doctors take Hippocratic oaths. Lawyers take them. Firemen take them. The only place that we do not find it consistent is within our educational system. They have the most access to all children. You can change children's lives despite the fact of where they come from. You can do this if we have the loving heart and the loving mind to do so.
Right.
It should not be a predictor, Amos,
mm-hmm.
as to how we leave children behind based on a parent's inability to be the best parent that they can be.
Right.
You cannot justify the maltreatment of these young people.
All right. Good points, my sister. I appreciate it. Let me go to Patrice at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hi.
Hi.
I just want to say that I agree with the first caller that the school systems should all work together as a whole. It starts in preschool. Preschool kids should have a curriculum that they are expected to know and learn so that when they come to kindergarten, this is what you know, this is what we're going to move forward on, and not everybody all over the place. One child knows this, one child knows that, one child doesn't know this, one child has never been in a classroom setting ever in their life, and then it does start at home. My kids are 5 and 2.
Mm-hmm.
My daughter is 2 years old, and she knows how to spell her name. There are certain things that a school should not have to teach a child. A child should know how to spell their name. A child should know their address. They should know their phone number. Those are basic things that all parents should know. You had to teach your child. You had to spell their child name when you gave it to the hospital to put on the birth certificate. So you can teach your child how to spell their name. And I do agree that when it comes to teachers, teachers do need to have that compassion and that care, because I came from the poor, the projects, the no hope, where statistics said I should be still in the projects with a million kids, but I don't have that because I did have those few teachers who recognized my potential and they pushed me.
Right.
So teachers are just pushing kids out the classroom and not caring whether or not they succeed or fail. I'm just going to pass you to get rid of you. That's not what constitutes a good learning system or a good school system. It starts from preschool, learning, needing to know what I need to know for me to go to kindergarten and be a successful student throughout my entire learning career.
Does it also, let me ask you, because you're making some great points, Regina, should it also be that preschools understand what the expectations that kindergartens in school districts, whether it's IPS, townships, charters, whatever, what those expectations are so that everybody's kind of on the same page?
Yes. They should all meet together. Honestly, they should all meet together. The preschool teachers, Head Start teachers, whether it's preschool or Head Start, and kindergarten teachers, they need to come together and they need to create a curriculum together that this is what our kindergartners need to know. This is how they need to be prepared. Because my son, this is his first year in kindergarten, and he said, Mommy, I love kindergarten. And I said, why, baby? He said, because we do more work. All he did in preschool was play. And I would go to his, he went to Head Start, school 75. I would go to his teacher, and I would take his learning books, his journals that we did at home, and say, this is what we're practicing at home. This is what he needs to be practicing at school. And I got looked upon like I was trying to tell the teacher what the teacher needs to do. No, this is what I expect my child to know.
Mm-hmm.
This is not a playground. I'm not sending him here to play. If I want him to play, he would be in daycare. I'm sending him here to learn.
All right, great points, my sister. I appreciate it. 239-1310, 239-1310 is Afternoons with Amos. It is a town hall on education. What is a great school, and how do we ensure a great school for every child? How can we ensure every child in IPS and in this whole city, not just IPS, everywhere, like Lawrence, Warren, Pike, Perry, Washington, all you charter folk too, how do we ensure everybody has access to a high-quality preschool, not daycare, as the last caller said, and how do we ensure that every neighborhood, not just Geist, not just downtown, but we're talking like the Hollow and Martindale, Brightwood, the Far East Side, that everybody has equal access to outstanding schools. We want to hear from you by phone, by text message at 85620, keyword Amos. We'll go to praiseindy.com, send me an email message. This afternoon's with Amos, special town hall on education after these. All right, we're back. 239-1310, 239-1310, this afternoon's with Amos. Oh, you know, everybody here in the studio, they've got to listen next Wednesday. Next Wednesday, and all of you listening have to listen next Wednesday. The folks from the Indianapolis Star will be here live. You got a question for the newspaper? You know, if you get home delivery, they've jacked up your rate. And they say, well, you got all these little extra things on the computer. And people say, well, I don't use a computer. I don't have a smartphone. I got a dumb phone. Well, the new editor of the Indianapolis Star, who came here from Detroit a couple of months ago, he'll be here live, head of marketing for the Star. We'll be here live. They're going to talk about they're just not. They got the newspaper. They got the websites. They got this. They got that. They'll be here. Yeah, they know that you all will be very nice and very friendly to them at 239-1310. 239-1310 is Afternoon's Amos. We're talking education today. Back to the phones in RK. Hi there.
Good afternoon, Amos, and to your guest.
Yeah.
I think a great school starts of – I want to first agree with all the other callers. And some of this is going to be duplication, but I think a great school really starts at home with the parents. And in the event, I think parents and grandparents and other family members need to get involved and stay more involved. I know they are. And then the second thing I want to say, too, we need to also look at the nutritional value of what the children are getting, because I know a lot of times the kids are eating things that have sugar content in it. And I remember the study that was done and about what kids were eating in the morning, because that glucose level is going to drop. Probably at mid-morning, and so they're going to be sluggish. So I think we need to look at the nutritional contents of what the children are getting at home and at school, and as well as we just need to all stay involved.
I know in school they have tightened that down in terms of the nutritional value that kids get in terms of the – Dr. White's nodding his head – in terms of the lunches that they get. But you're right, you can't control at home. So all of a sudden if you start at home – with, you know, sugar smacks, you know, and extra dump of sugar. That's almost like the adult going to Starbucks.
And even at breakfast time, you know, the donuts or the toasties or something like that, whatever they're getting in the morning from school at home.
Yeah.
I think when you start looking at that, the limiting that,
mm-hmm.
and as well as we just really need to get involved with our kids all over again.
All right, appreciate it. Let me go to Shirley at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hey, hello, and hello to the guests. I would like to say that I agree with Brenda that it's the will of whether we're educating our children equally and educating with love, because we have lots of national programs, and we have all of the information that we need. We have Teachers Corps, which was a national project of best practices for teachers. We've had Head Start, the reason for Head Start, how those children succeed. We've had Upward Bound, how do you matriculate children, that's first generation. We've had parents teaching at-risk children forever, parents actually getting taught how to teach their children at home. Head Start did it also. We have a Lemonade Project. We have other exemplary models right. of what works with children. So it goes back to the will of this country.
All right, great points. 239-1310. 239-1310's Afternoon's Name is back to the phones. And Tony, hi there.
Hi, how you doing, sir?
Fine.
Good. Did I hear you say Dr. White was in the house, too?
Yeah, but they're listening today. All of the guests are primarily listeners.
Well, Dr. White, I want to say I know you get a lot of negative responses from people, but I support you, man. I understand where you're coming from. However, this is what I want to say, and it's going to sound kind of crazy, but we've been lying to our children We were lied to as children, and our grandparents likewise. Where in the world do we get off telling our children lies? We sit our kindergartners, our preschoolers down in school, and we teach them their colors. And we say, this is black, and this is white, and this is brown, and this is green, and this is red, and this is yellow. And then we are all different shades and colors, but we're still called black. The last time I checked, black represented darkness. And if it represents black power, why are we always lowest on the totem pole and all of that kind of stuff that comes with being black?
Well, hold on. I understand where you're coming from, but I need you to stay on task today.
This is about education.
Well, then how does that – hold on a second.
When you teach someone their colors and then you sit and tell them that they are a certain color, they're looking at the crayon box, they see the difference between brown and black.
Mm-hmm.
We're starting them out with negativity right now. It may not make sense to you, but I know what it means to me. I've been trying to figure this out for 40-something years. Why are we called black when the box says we're brown? Now, just imagine a child sitting there trying to learn this, and you're telling them that they're black.
All right, I see your point. Let me go on to Anonymous at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hi, I just had a comment to say. I was in a situation where my daughter had to go to a teacher conference, and she was a C student, and she felt really bad about the conference, saying, I'm going to do my best. And when everything happens, I had to be honest with my daughter and say, I wasn't there for you to do your homework. And from that day, I had to quit my job. I had to budget my life around her education. And when she get out of school, we study 10 hours a day, and we still, she's a straight-A student now, but I had to take responsibility and cut my budget and my lifestyle of living to let her know it's not your fault you're not getting your grades. You need somebody there to look over your homework, to give you a good meal, to support you, to check over all your homework when it's wrong. You want to change the school system, you have to change the mothers. You have to change the guardians, because you have so many women, they going to get their education right now. They want to be nurses. Forget their kids' education. But being a mother is a job. When you have that child, you had your opportunity to go to college. You had your opportunity to be a nurse. Now it's that child at time to be that you decided to go out and have unprotected sex. You decided to do whatever to have these babies, but now it's your time to get your education, and your child is trying to learn how to balance equations and put fractions together. But you out here get your education, graduate from school. No, children bury their parents. We can't keep thinking that as women that we're going to go out there and get our education, forget our kids, then our kids going to bury us, and then they're going to be ignorant while they put our smart butt under the grave. It's their time to get their education. If a mother want to get her education, wait till your child get 18 years old, send them off to college, then go to an adult program and start your life over.
All right, my sister, good points. I need to move on. Thank you. Let me go to Elise at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hi. How are you this afternoon, Amos?
I'm fine.
Hello to the panel.
Fine. How are you?
Good. I'm semi-agreeing with most of your callers, but what I have not actually heard, what I feel that would really boost our children's education is their pay rate. I believe that their pay scale ought to go accordingly to the scores of their classrooms, their kids, how they learn. Give the teachers an incentive to be the best that they can be, and their kids will be that as well. I also think that it should start at kindergarten, preschool, and kindergarten. It's pretty simple. It's pretty cut and dry. So they might not need to make a whole lot of money. They need to make some money to make a living. But I think the pocket, their pocketbook is what is going to govern how they treat their job. Is it going to be just a job to them, or is this an adventure every year to see, you know, how their class progresses year after year after year? I really think our teachers get way too little pay
for what they do because they are glorified babysitters in some cases. I understand everything about the parents, but we can't go into people's homes and regulate what they do in their homes. But we can put a standard on our teachers. And how can we enforce that standard? By their pay rate.
All right, great point.
I think it's a tragedy that the trash man, the garbage man, makes more than our teachers who educate our kids.
All right, you made some great points, my sister. I appreciate it. Thanks to you. 239-1310. 239-1310 is afternoon's name. I want to touch base with Mark Russell from the Urban League, Ellen Anila of the United Way. Mark Russell first. As you're listening to this, we've not heard people as they give suggestions on what's a great school, how do we ensure a great school for everyone, how do we ensure every child has access to a high-quality preschool. We've not heard people give their feedback on the schools their kids or grandkids may be in right now. Is it, how important is satisfaction in all of this? Mark?
Well, I think it's very important that the parents and the students be satisfied with their environment. Oftentimes in these discussions, the one thing that we don't do is include the view of the students. And this process has been very deliberative in that we've done that and had separate forums for them to get their views.
What surprised you in terms of the feedback from young people, from students?
Well, I think, and I wouldn't necessarily say it's surprising, but it's often overlooked, that they too are looking for quality mm-hmm. and expectations and parameters, both in terms of behavior and academic expectations. If you do not have high expectations, you will not have high results. But just to follow up on something one of the earlier callers mentioned about the will of the country, and if the callers could chime in on this, nothing is free. So we need to ask ourselves, what are we willing to put on the table? Are you wanting to put resources up out of your pocket to help get these child care centers and our education system in general up to par? And then finally, I wanted to share an anecdote real quick. Mm-hmm. One of my colleagues lives in a suburban township, and his neighbor teaches in Wayne Township. And the problems that we've all talked about are there out in the suburbs, too. This is an elementary teacher who has 22 children. More than half of them could not write their name, didn't know their colors, couldn't sit coherently in a class. And despite our history of racial oppression and other issues here, there are some things that it is a parental responsibility. Mm-hmm. And we don't need to shirk from that. Parents need to be parents.
Ellen Anila, preschool has been a priority for United Way of Central Indiana. Some could say that that's one of your legacies as CEO of United Way. How critical is it as this community talks about education, that the whole issue of the quality of preschool needs to be at the same level and the same volume as the quality of K through 12 education?
Well, I think the listeners and the callers clearly get this, that this starts with birth, and I think educators know this. Part of what we're so focused on is how do we not just know it, but then create a system where we know where the quality is and that we have affordable options for all families to have quality early intervention and early education. And, it's never just one. It's not just parents. It's parents and whoever the caregivers are, whether it's in a child care center so that the parents can work. Mm-hmm. That is our focus, is how can we make sure that there are quality options for all children.
When we talk about you just brought up mm-hmm. the child care centers at an employer, whether it's Eli Lilly or whether it's this one or that one, are they as plugged in to preschool standards as others, or is that's got to be part of that conversation?
Well, I think it is for all child care centers. I think many of the employer ones are very good, but we also know that there are a lot of child care centers that are receiving federal vouchers that are not good, mm-hmm. and part of our job is not only to bring them up to quality, it's also to get some of the ones that aren't going to improve closed, but it's also to make sure parents understand what quality means mm-hmm. and to demand and expect it. And it's very clear that your callers understand that.
Let me go back to the phones and anonymous at 239-1310. Hi there.
How you doing?
Fine.
I want to say hi to you and your panel today.
Uh-huh.
And I have a question. It might not be concerning about what you're talking about today, but a little bit. I have a child that's in middle school, and he goes to school every day, don't miss a day of school. And he feel like when he goes to school, he's getting a little bullied by a teacher. And I want to know
by
your policy.
By a teacher?
By a teacher. And I want to know your policy of the restroom rule. Last week, he said he had to hold himself for 45 minutes.
Yeah, are you the mom or grandma?
I am the mother, and me and my husband tried to get on top of it. We went to the school. I went to the school Tuesday.
Uh-huh.
My husband called last Friday, and we called to see can we get some kind of meeting because my son seemed like.
And did you get a meeting?
They said we're supposed to get one Monday. I was just concerned really about the rules about the child needs to use the restroom.
All right, what school district is this?
IPS.
All right, I tell you what, they have not given you a date for a meeting with the principal?
They said we will meet with the principal Monday.
Monday coming?
Yes.
Okay, here's what I want you to do off the air so I don't get off track.
Okay.
If I want you off the air to give Chris, the gentleman that answered the phone, if you will give Chris your name,
okay,
the name of the school, mm-hmm, and a number where you can be reached during the day.
Okay.
We're going to put that in the superintendent's hands.
Okay. I sure appreciate it.
Oh, and the name of the student.
Okay.
Okay?
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. 239-1310. But this also, the importance of, and I'm going to throw my little one on the table so y'all can put this in the transcript. And I've said this in print in the recorder. Isn't it time for a list of Bill of Rights for parents? Rights and responsibilities. In other words, you send your kid to a public school or school paid for by the taxpayers of Indiana. What is that school's rights? What rights do parents have? And then there's responsibilities. Obviously, the main one, your job to get your kid. The law says you must get the kid to school on time and in decent order. You know, are we at a point, Ellen Antler, where we need that as a society? And then the corollary to that is making the business community understand if that mom needs to go to a school immediately to deal with their child, they should not have to worry about. I had a lady call when we did the broadcast in Lawrence Township that had a problem in the school in Lawrence Township. She could not go deal with her kid's problem because IU Health, yes, Dan Evans, I'm mentioning you, wouldn't give her time off and would dock her pay, and she was more worried about losing the money. My thing is, if you got a problem with school, go to school and get it. The school gives you a note to take back to your employer. Ellen?
Well, I think what you're saying, Amos, is there's an education role and an outreach role that all of us have, whether we're talking about employers, families, providers, teachers, that there's a responsibility and rights that all of us have. And I think that's what you're talking about. And I think it's a great community conversation to keep having. What are those rights and responsibilities? Parents, teachers, providers, everyone.
Got a text message at 85620, keyword Amos. There are a lot of great preschools out there. They are just too expensive. A lot of daycares offer CCDF, but if you make over the income guidelines, it's impossible. How critical is affordability for, you know, parents or grandparents to get their kid in a high-quality preschool experience?
Well, and that's exactly what United Way is working on. One of the things we find is the registered ministries provide a very affordable option because they are ministries of religious, of churches and synagogues. And so we're working with many of them because they're unregulated. And if we can get that quality up, then you again have that good quality option that's an affordable option.
Given that the parochial K through 12 schools, whether it's Catholic, whether it's Jewish, whether it's Lutheran, provide, or even Heritage Christian, provide great education at K through 12, in terms of secular education with the religious underpinnings, is that a way to show daycare ministries to provide the educational quality that is equal to other preschools, and still they would retain their religious, education and their religious orientation?
You know, I think a lot of the registered ministries are realizing the importance of the role they play in early childhood development and education. And that doesn't do anything about their religious instruction, but they're beginning to realize that they can do both. And, you know, we don't have public preschool for all children. And so it's important to look at where children are. That's why we're looking at these small and the religious child care centers.
239-1310, 239-1310 is afternoon's name. We'll take a break. The town hall on education continues. Oh, next Tuesday we start the candidates coming in as part of Candidate Tuesdays. We're starting Tuesday with independent write-in candidates that are running for local offices and state offices, libertarian candidates, and there's even a socialist candidate. No joke. And you never heard a socialist? You'll hear one Tuesday on the program. All that and more. It's Afternoons with Amos after these. All right, if you just tuned in, it's a town hall on education. And we're asking you to contribute. What's a great school and how do we ensure a great school for every child? How do we ensure every child in this city and county has access to a high-quality preschool experience? How can we ensure all neighborhoods have equal access to outstanding schools? And we want to hear your ideas or suggestions. Forget about cost. Forget about the politics of it. This isn't to critique somebody. This is to provide an idea solutions. We've heard some great ideas as the program is being transcribed. This is all part of a process called What's Possible Indy. What's Possible Indy? Conversations about improving education in the city, facilitated by the mayor's office and by the Indianapolis Public Schools, and co-sponsored by Stand for Children Indiana, United Way of Central Indiana, the NAACP, UNCF, Indianapolis Urban League, and the Mind Trust. Back to the phones, and Robert, hi there.
Amos and your panel. Well, I'd like to say, first of all, the parents got to realize along with the school that education is value-based. The parents got to understand and really put great emphasis and value on the child getting a great education. Mm-hmm. Number two, they got to have strict discipline within the classroom, because if you don't have no discipline, it is not a place where learning can take place.
Right.
And three, you got some parents that will not take an active interest in teaching the kids. And number four, the school should have teachers that is willing to set aside their little petty biases and be dedicated to teaching the kids what is they supposed to know throughout their lives, so they can be productive citizens. And I firmly believe that if that atmosphere is perpetuated in the classroom, then education would be great.
All right, appreciate it. Let me go to Shaq at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hey, how you doing, Amos?
I'm
and everybody.
Fine.
What I got to say is I have five children all going to school here in Marion County. Out of those five, the three that are eligible for grades have had straight A's, one superintendent awards, one Martin Luther King contest or something that they had against the school district, first place. It's me and my wife, and we work as a team. I work nights. So that way I have children in the daytime. Anything happen in school, I react. Sometimes as parents, I know I heard the one teacher was the lady who called said that she had a child that couldn't use the bathroom. We've had that instance. My thing is that I'm not just going to come see you and not see you that day, plain and simple. I wouldn't leave that office till I've seen someone that day and get this taken care of, because some teachers do hold kids and make them do that. I think one time my child at the early age, like in kindergarten, used the bathroom on herself. Mm-hmm. I told that teacher that's not to happen anymore, because you get where kids start bullying and talking about kids at certain ages, it may affect them. So when they start doing that, I knew from now on my kid was automatically going to the bathroom. Sometimes as parents and these parents, we get into working and everything, and we put our kids in the rear and don't realize that we have to also put ourselves in front of the teachers. We have to be able to get and talk to these teachers. And one time a child of mine was watching a PG movie in the teacher's room. I said, wait a minute. I said, don't ever let my child. I said, it's parental guardian. I'm the parent, meaning that until you clear anything with me, don't, my kid is not to watch anything. And so we have to do that. Another thing, another caller called in. You can still be that nurse. My mom was a single parent. She had three boys. I'm the oldest. She got a nursing degree while she was working at Methodist, doing housekeeping and working at the post office in the daytime in Gary. So it's not impossible to do. But I think we put too much things in the government and expect them to do it. And that's why now, back in the days, my mom can write me a note and say he can't come to school today. Nowadays, you can't do that anymore, because a lot of the parental control has already been put into the government's hands. So all of this stuff, and to some, you know, respect, the government has to step up for some of the things that were being lacked. But that's how my kids have become successful. The other two, the one in first grade, she hasn't gotten a report card yet, but I expect to see straight A's from her also. So the thing is that keep your expectations high, but also realize that you have to do more parenting than the work, and you have to work it out. And if you're single, one of the things is ladies, pick a quality guy. Pick somebody that's going to stand up and that's going to work and that's going to be there for the kids, whether you're together or broke up, because right now they're saying that the households are making more. But the thing is that now both parents are working, which I feel that might be a hindrance, because back in the days you had mom that stayed there all day and worked your problems out with you and go talk to your teacher. Now you don't have that anymore. You have single parents and you have two parental working. So that's my input on it.
All right, great points. Let me go to Anonymous at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hi, Amos.
Hi.
And hi to your panel.
Mm-hmm.
I want to let you know that your radio broadcast is a ministry to me. I've learned a lot over the years through your program, and that helped me to be more consistent and be an active, involved parent. And right now I'm dealing with some situation with my oldest son with his school. And it's like, you know, I feel like I'm being persecuted. We're being persecuted because I am consistent. And I just, you know, kind of got a little bit discouraged about that and just not really getting the benefit of the doubt as being that, you know, active, involved parent. And I want to know what it is specifically when they say parents get involved. Specifically, what is it that you mean when you tell parents get involved? Because I'm involved.
Rather than have the panel answer the question, what do you think parental involvement in the schools ought to be? If you had the magic wand and everything, you know, broke your way, if you were like Tiger Woods, and he's leading, by the way, if you were Tiger and everything was going well, or you were like Gabby Douglas and you were hitting, you know, the marks in gymnastics, what should it be?
Well, I think a lot of parents don't understand their rights, and when they ask for a student handout or whatever, it just seems like me, I get a hard time getting that. So I get involved because I want to know and learn what the system, you know, is setting in place. A lot of parents don't really understand the policy or the law or anything like that, and so I feel like a lot of the parents get taken advantage of, and I think a lot of us get stereotyped, and I just feel like we need to encourage one another. We need to stop tearing down one another. We need to walk in love, and we need to motivate our children. We need to constantly speak into their life, positive things into their life. If there's peace in the home, that can help as well. You know, if the atmosphere in your home is in peace, at peace, that can help.
And let me ask you, Anonymous, should schools break down how things are supposed to work the way Bill Clinton broke it down last night?
Exactly. Help us to understand what your rules are and what you're expecting of us. And, you know, and then, you know, maybe if some parents, if they don't feel intimidated, maybe they would, you know, be more involved, you know, when they feel like when they come in, you know, because some parents may have low self-esteem about themselves because, you know, they didn't get the right education for themselves. And so they kind of like, you know, they shy away.
Mm-hmm. All right. Great points, my sister. I appreciate it. 239-1310. 239-1310. I'm going to go to Latasha, then we'll take a break. Hi there.
Hi. I just kind of wanted to comment because I missed the majority of the show, but I heard your opening questions regarding what can or what suggestions do we have to make a good school.
Great school.
And a great school.
Yes.
And one thing that I have noticed, I have a sixth grader and a fifth grader, and I have noticed there is no consistency in their progress or their objectives by the end of the year. So the things that my daughter was capable of doing by the end of her fifth grade year, my, you know, her younger sister was on a totally different path. And the reason they are successful is because I'm an involved parent. Both myself and my husband work. But when I come home, that is my second job. I'm helping with homework and reteaching if she didn't get it the first time. But I think we need teachers that care about the individual student's ability, not necessarily their grade.
Let me make sure I understand what you're saying. You're saying that you had a fifth grader and a sixth grader, right?
Yes.
And when the fifth grader got to sixth grade, what happened in the sixth grade with them was different than what happened with your sixth grader when they went through the sixth grade the first time?
Right, but take it back a year because they just started sixth and fifth grade now.
Okay.
So what I'm saying is my sixth grader now, what she got in the year prior and what my other daughter got in that same grade was totally different, like just on their math skills. And now that she's in fifth grade, she's expected to know those things that she didn't get. So we gonna make sure she gets it because I'm doing that at home. And math and science is my thing. I'm a scientist. So make sure she gets that. But not all parents are capable of doing that. And I have been involved, like the last caller. It's like you talk about parents not being involved, but there is a tad bit of retaliation from teachers, whether they admit it or not. They're not going to admit it, but there is. But despite that, I still stay involved. I still email and call and contact the teachers, not only the teachers, but the principals, and to make sure that we get things done. But I didn't realize the discrepancy between their math skills until the beginning of the year started. Now she's in fifth grade, and they're working on division. She didn't cover or master multiplication. If we know those go hand in hand, so if you didn't master one, you're not going to master the other.
Same
so there's no harmony between the expectations or the objectives for that particular grade.
I got to ask this one question. Same teacher?
Same teacher.
Same teacher, different consistency?
Yes.
What district?
Wayne Township.
Okay. All right, 239-1310. I appreciate that. Thank you. 239-1310. 239-1310 is Afternoons with Amos. They probably just fainted over in Wayne Township, those that are listening over there. It's a town hall on education. We're learning a lot. What's a great school, and how do we ensure a great school for every child in this city? How can we ensure that every child has access to a high-quality preschool experience? How can we ensure all neighborhoods have equal access to outstanding schools? We need to hear from you. We've had some in our first hour. Great suggestions. Kariga has filled out two whole notebooks making notes already. Serious business. We want to hear from you. The best suggestions haven't come because you haven't participated yet. 239-1310. 239-1310 is Afternoons with Amos after these.